back. Underground Espionage, episode 47. I forgot to look.
I was going
to
commend you for
looking. It
is.
It's 47.
Great job.
It's 47.
Sure?
It is. Yes. Yes.
I
yes,
don't
yes.
know.
It is episode 47. Tara, happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, my. That's right. It is. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Pleasure Day. Day of Pleasure Day. Of the sexual story of O.
Can I pleasure myself by adjusting my mic as much as I want
today? I mean, I think that's just going to happen no matter what.
I actually don't do it as much as I want to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hold back. I'm holding back. Yeah, it's been a wonderful romp around with poor Odile.
Yes, as promised last week, today's feature is Jess Franco's The Sexual Story of O. Keeping it erotic here for this day, this month. And we just finished watching it. So we are in the world of Jess Franco, Desaad, and O.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a world to be in. And well.
It's we'll get to it. We'll
okay,
get to it.
Okay, Your pregnant pause led me into a frenzy, and I just started going, you know what I mean?
It's just been a week of erotic
thrills, recording, research,
watching.
Yeah. Really getting material for eroticism it's fun. It's fantastic. It's pleasurable to record, but you know, it is. It is a lot of work.
Hey, T.
And not to mention that, you know, I've been completely sick and under the weather and out of it.
Putting in the erotic
things.
Work. Yeah,
just
so.
Really. Kind of like been a dizzy dame lately.
Yeah,
just
I mean.
Lightheaded.
As, you know, listeners know, you keep up on our, you know, health issues, generally Tara's health issues. And this week has been a kind of a throwback to the days of old, actually, which is not necessarily enjoyable.
Oh, yes. My stomach has been paralyzed for a week. And, you know, it requires modification in what I do and planning, how I drink liquids and consume foods. And then I get really dizzy and I almost pass out all the time. But other than that, everything's great. I'm kind of like, you know what, much like your mic stand right now, much like the back of my socks say that we discovered on one episode, quite run through.
Feeling a little run through, feeling a little ran through. Tara, this is where we put the Tara news portion, but I'm going to go ahead and throw something out there. Something I know is on the Tara News docket in general. I don't know if this is not something you're going to say.
I don't know. What is it? I don't know.
But I haven't, I'm not saying I'm deep into it, but there's a aspect of the case. Well, two aspects of the case that I've been honing in on this week, and that's that kidnapping.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited. You're into the kidnapping. It's well, that's pretty wild.
Well, I honestly don't know a ton about it. My main interests are the door cam pictures.
Yes, yes.
Which are incredible.
That piqued your interest. I was surprised that you were interested in this story.
Well, that and that the kidnappers are demanding Bitcoin.
No, but that was a fraud. Somebody was being opportunistic.
But I think it's both.
Both, yes.
I think the kidnappers are demanding Bitcoin, but then somebody
else was looking for the ransom money, yes.
Yes. So, but I do believe
the false person
that is the kidnappers are, again, I might be wrong.
I'll look into it more. I wasn't prepared to speak on it. You know why? Because in Tara News, like, I love that you're into it. The kidnappers' faces look terrifying. And the fact that it's not like a child, it's somebody's elderly mother. It's just, you know.
Well,
it's fucking awful.
Well, but what's interesting just in general, you know, I think it's a good sign. These kidnappers seem to think that Bitcoin's going to pump again. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That they think Bitcoin's going to pump. They think that they have a wallet. Like, how are they going to use their wallet?
So this
how
is
are they
going to
launder
say.
The Bitcoin? Here's they think the, it's untraceable. What are they going to do? What's their
here's
plan?
Here's the thing. And this is actually what my dad says about crypto. He's always like, only criminals need it. And I understand that that is what people think about
with
crypto.
Well, no, that's what my dad always said, too. He's like, I don't need Bitcoin.
That's what people think about with crypto. And I understand in some ways. But at the same time, ultimately, you need to get it in. Unless you're doing every single transaction for the rest of time via Bitcoin and via crypto, via your wallet, eventually you have to get it out. Or if you send it to somebody, they're going to get it out. It's incredibly traceable. And eventually it gets, once you take it out, it's got to go into a bank account. That's how it works.
Yes.
This is how the...
Yeah, you can't take it out as physical money. So it's ultimately traceable. Now,
it's incredible. Now, you can be very, you can make it very confusing and chaotic. But for example, that's how that couple got caught who like hijacked $7 million worth of crypto.
Yeah.
And eventually they had to get it out in some way.
Once you clock the wallet that takes the money out, it is very traceable. Just like people doing ransomware and everything.
Right,
like
but it is, you can be very chaotic with it and it be very confusing, but at this point, and this is such a public case, that I feel like they could devote a team to basically tracing it. And again, if they never cash it out, you could conceivably never get caught. But say you transact with it, say you transact to somebody else, and then that somebody else takes it out. Well, then it goes, you know, do you see what I'm
saying? Yeah, as soon as there's activity, it's traceable. No, I see what you're saying.
And I know you do.
And I like that you're intrigued by their plan. It's like, if you're going to commit a high-profile crime and then demand Bitcoin, what is your out? How do you anticipate spending this money? Because yes, you could sit on it, but as soon as you do anything,
are you gonna wait for that bear?
Yeah, are we gonna wait for that bear? I mean, look, who knows which direction it's going? But once you transact, it's over for these hosts, you know.
Well, and so, right, and so that's the thing with crypto. It's in on one hand, it's totally anonymous, but on the other hand, it's completely public and traceable.
Yes.
So it is a strange world.
So that I like that's the part that you were.
Yeah, that's basically, I really actually still don't know who this woman is or like,
or like what this has to do with anything. You're just excited about the photos of the crazy people who stole it. They do look scary as hell.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call them crazy, actually. Well, they're very actually probably
malicious people. I just said crazy as like an emphatic word.
Well, I know. These
calculating,
planned out,
or criminals.
Are we gonna? Is this gonna be come out to be some total?
Somebody
you know,
they
know, you never know how many stories are like that. When you know that, then all of a sudden it turns out it's some
jabroni,
or it's like a whole fake thing. Yeah. You know.
Well, look, I mean, I really, much like you.
Sorry, I threw that.
I was not reading that deeply. I was just perusing the false ransom guy. I was looking at the photos much like you, but I was excited that I found, in looking for titles and in reading through notebooks for eroticism, I found lists of topics that I wanted to surreptitiously like weasel in at times, and I forgot that I even made this list.
Oh yeah.
And Mike, can you tell me, I think I've managed to like discuss some of these things that I find exciting. One being porcupine sounds.
I feel like that's been discussed, and they are pretty wild. Yeah.
They're so adorable. They're the most cute sounds ever. We did discuss this on Home Time, I believe. Now, did I ever discuss ostriches laying eggs and like the dances, their mating dances that look terrifying in ostrich egg clutches?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay, that's really something. Did I ever discuss the sounds of Jupiter's moon?
I feel like that we discussed.
I don't think I ever did. The sounds of Jupiter's moon?
I feel like
the moon making sounds?
It maybe we discussed it off mic, but I feel like we've talked about that.
Yeah, I don't think we discussed
maybe
that.
Not.
I know
it sounds familiar when you said that.
Lurs.
I don't know what they sound like.
We did discuss lurs, which is like the wind horns that people would make, ancient wind horns, which I really want to look more about that. Do you remember discussing anti-venom in horses?
Yes.
And how horses make anti-venom in snakes?
We did discuss that.
Carpet fungus and moss, how moss can lay their eggs in carpet.
That's wild.
Do we discuss that? Isn't that wild?
Don't believe so.
Yeah, there's a specific, like, I mean, you know about, like, moths that lay their eggs in clothing, right?
That's
why people do mothballs. But there are moths that invade, especially wool rugs. And if they're even the least bit damp, they come and they lay their eggs in, like, in between little. But can you imagine having a bunch of, because they come out as, like, larvae and then they eat the rug. But can you imagine a bunch of, like, moths and larvae in your rug? That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's really,
it's so
really
gross
to think about.
And then, I mean, I have several pages of things that I wanted to weasel in.
I love it, but save them.
But one more that I find exciting, and everyone can look at this. It's limnic eruptions. Now, that sounds very sexual, and I think that can bring us kind of into,
I like it,
the sexual story of, oh, like, limnic eruptions sound like some sort of, like, thing where you, like, come without getting touched or something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's actually,
that'd be wild.
When there's, and there's, it's a thing about it. There's things about it. Okay, so I knew someone who could do it. They claimed, but.
Well, the, okay.
They claimed.
Move
as
along.
They claimed. So limnic eruptions.
Talk about unfounded claims.
Unfounded claims. Well, or all we're doing is making unfounded claims.
That's
kind of.
What,
I mean,
we do
the unfounded claims.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
When there's an earthquake under a lake and it makes a fissure under generally a body of water, and then carbon dioxide is released into that area, the carbon dioxide can hug the surface of the lake and be low-lying on the area around that land, and it can cause everything in it to die off, like entire herds of cattle.
Oh, wow.
Or anything that's in the area. So it's this, you know, something like if it happened in ancient times and you're just like walking around, you would have no idea why you just happened upon everything in the area,
right,
that died
dead. Because
they suffocated.
Ugh.
And part of it is the limnic eruption. Isn't that terrifying?
That is.
And wild?
Yeah.
And also it would be, you know, thinking about when's it safe to go back in the area? How often could it possibly happen? Like trying to find the source of what happened. I would imagine that it's terrifying.
I can think of some places I'd like to, a limnic eruption to happen.
You can't choose it, Mike.
Oh, you can't?
You can't choose it. But it does sound sexy.
Well, it does. And I guess we should just get right in to the sexual story of, oh, now anyone who has listened to us knows our love of Jess Franco. We've actually done, this will be our third Jess Franco episode on underground espionage. We did Bloody Moon a bit ago, and then we followed that up with House of Lost Women. So we were showing two sides.
Yeah,
of,
well,
the
this
Jess
is another,
Franco
a total
coin.
Different type of side.
Exactly.
To Jess Franco.
So this is one in the Golden Films era, which our friend who really got us fully in the world of Jess Franco has pointed out that we've really, like, the Golden Film era is really our era. Night of Open Sex, Cries of Pleasure,
yes.
Bahia Blanca, of course, our favorite. And so this, the late 70s, early to mid 80s era of Jess Franco is really where we hone in on the master.
They're so romantic. They're so idealized. Everyone is hypersexual. I've never seen a bra. I was trying to remember if I've ever seen a bra in a Jess Franco film. No, I haven't. But truly, I think that it's him being in his own Jess sort of way, in his own filter, super ideal. And
well, yeah, and it, but it's also very dark.
Yes.
And that darkness, I think, is where we really connect with these movies.
Yes, I was gonna just start reading what was at the beginning of the film, but I think the darkness is his romance language in its own way, because it
absolutely
adds the elements of realism and it adds the longing, and you don't have the longing unless you have the loss.
Well, absolutely. No, and I think that's what we, you know, the darkness, the desad elements of it, and the loss, the sadness, the melancholy is what makes these movies stand out so much to us.
Okay.
So Tara, why don't you read
the words in the opening of the film, and picture Odile, a classic American name, Mike. Oh, dear.
Oh, you know, we know so many.
We know so many. Just, she's walking around in a pasture, walking through fields, wearing pink jeans and a open white shirt, reading books, dreaming, looking at damp roses, and we see these words.
With the melancholic acoustic guitar music playing.
Yes, and it's all music as called out in the beginning of the film. It's all music from Madrid. This is all filmed in the Costa del Sol, so Mediterranean coast, and you know, you can just picture the glittering beauty of the landscape. We are intruders in the fog, looking for blurred images. Individuals chained to dusty memories that are not even ours. We try to find among those gray and undefined outlines a sharper image, a hint in the horizon. We only discover faces as undefined as it might be. And as we approach, tripping over the low branches or the stubbles, we only discover faces that are not even unknown, anonymous.
Yeah, so it's the frame is set for a darker turn of things. And I'll read the back of the Severn Blu-ray to give the story of the sexual story above. When a vacationing nymphette is seduced by an amoral couple, she'll be sold into a nightmare of desire, degeneracy, and a climax of carnal torment that remains one of the most disturbing sequences in Uncle Jesse's entire 80s oeuvre. I know you're thinking, is this the story of underground espionage? No, no. It is a different amoral couple. And yeah, so you are lulled into the music. Lulls you, but then that opening narration tells you this is going to be something different, and it does lead to one of the most incredible final scenes in a Jess Franco movie, I would say.
Yeah, it's like you almost don't see it coming, even if somebody tells you that that's what's about to happen, because you know we come in on a, I don't know, exchange student, somebody who seems to be in a resort, and she's, you know, being teased by a couple on the neighboring balcony. They're like, oh, kiss me more. I'm going to come out. Like, you know, she's out in her thong.
She's
making out with her boyfriend while the neighbor girl is hopping around, listening to cassettes while reading Norman Mailer.
Yeah, The Naked and the Dead, right? You know, so it's like this great. And again, this has.
She also had The Deep.
Yes. And this has the great thing about this era of Jess Franco movies where there's only five actors in the entire movie, and then for this whole first over half there's just the three. So that sense of the empty world, that's one of my favorite things about this era, is the world only contains these handful of people. There's no one else. There's no one else in this building. There's no one else in any of these other rooms. It's just these three people.
And even so much that, you know, as they're seducing and as they're teasing, eventually the lady Mara comes over, and she just walks over to the neighboring building wearing nothing but a sarong tied around her neck and some white knee boots. You know, and then they both walk off together nude. Like, there's so few people in this world that you just walk around basically nude.
Yeah, maybe just a little thong or sarong.
Going from apartment to apartment. That's right, a thong and a sarong, Mike. That is exactly what's going on. And then, you know, in between we get that romantic Jess where he's doing just like in the beginning, just close-ups on blossoming roses, like right at there at the peak blossom when they have a little dew dripping off of them kind of sluttily. And, you know, having that element interplayed with these people who are just romping about sexually, having a nice time, really seems kind of idyllic and innocent, right, Mike? What
absolutely
could go wrong?
Absolutely. And I love when they're having their first three-way and he's like, I'm Mario. He goes, just sweet Mario, you know, what's your name? And
yeah, you're like, hola,
because
Yeah. Sweet Mario.
And while Mucho they're banging. Gusto. Yeah. Like, I know, love right? that. And just that scene is so incredible, right? Yeah. It's just a great, like, it is. It really sets you up for this idyllic, you know, erotic scene.
And they make it clear, like, no one speaks English. So Odile is out on her own. She doesn't really understand what's going on, but she's just so freewheeling and pleasant, you know, that she just kind of wants to go along with it. She does seem like a sweetheart. She has the face of a sweetheart. Out on the balcony, I love the theme of everybody just like whistling and humming Ode to Joy. And like, of course, like that's his little wink and a smile while using that through line. I do love Mario's shirt that says quarterback camp receiver.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's
a football.
Total strange choice of shirt for a movie. Yeah.
It's very Bloody Moon.
Yeah. Like, where do they get? Yeah.
Mario's walking around in a Speedo.
And a quarterback camp.
With a Raglan t-shirt that says quarterback camp. And it says receiver.
Under it.
Which, again, is not, like, I don't know. Like, if you're going to have a sex scene, that's not the toughest position. You know what I mean?
I mean, but quarterback is. Because you're, like, calling the shots. You know what I mean?
Quarterback camp, but he's not the quarterback camp. He's the receiver.
It's very strange. it's definitely like a Euro translation of what
he's
American
helping the
football
quarterback.
Is,
yeah,
right?
Well, that's true. It's great. I mean, I don't understand this quarterback camp, but I'm willing to learn. You know, much like,
Or like in Bloody Moon, it's the language camp. Right?
I don't understand
language school for
what
languages.
Anyone is doing anywhere, really. But I understand it. I understand that I just need to go along with it.
You got to just let it unfold.
And you got to let it unfold. And boy, oh boy, does it unfold. So Mara just, you know, they all make love, a three-way love on the bed. And you think it's over. And they're like, the perfect prey. Here she is. And we're like, what could they possibly mean? I thought it was just a slutty little couple hanging out, trying to seduce some person because they didn't have anything else to do. And they finally saw someone else. No, Mike, not
Sarah,
the case.
What? They're not just here to have a good time?
Mara does come over, knock on the door, nibbles a little finger. And again, this has that episode, that part of Jess Franco, golden era, anything, where because they're not showing actual penetration and actual sex and it's just simulated and it's softcore, they do use their fingers and their mouths.
Right, right.
In the most suggestive of ways. And if you think just because Lena's not in this, that you're not going to get lip-licking, nibbling, erotic face pounding of nipples, no, you won't miss out. We have all of these elements.
Yeah, so this is one that Lena Romay is not in, but confusingly, she was used in the poster, and in fact, the slipcover of the 7 Blu-ray does have the picture of Lena on it. I actually kept it away so that we didn't
get confused. That's thank
and I'm
you.
Not gonna, even
going to
have it
that.
In the picture because it's a great picture of her, but it just is confusing. It's with her Candy Coster wig, but she's not in this, so I keep it away to keep things straight. You know?
Oh, that's you know what? I appreciate that because in my current state,
I did it on purpose, Tara.
You know, it is strange. Like I don't know anyone. Have you ever had an illness where you can't think straight? You just kind of like it's like when you're feverish. You know, like everything. It's like walking in a feverish haze. Where it's like you get the gist of everything that's going on, but you can't focus enough to really, like, affect anything in the world.
Well, it's been strange to be a part of it, you know. But in a way, it is interesting because it actually, I think, in a way has added to not only watching a movie like this, but also we watched Fascination, Jean Rollin. And I feel that your state made your experience of watching that movie heightened.
I'm in Jean Rollin brain. Like, that is how my brain is working right now. Like, everything just makes perfect sense.
in that world.
In that world, it's like, yeah, like it's pretty crazy.
But I also
crazy.
Even just think, you know, doing some creatively, it actually has been a strange benefit in a weird
yeah.
way, because
it's
your brain is
that...
a strange, your brain is doing strange things, I guess is what
My
I'm trying to say.
My brain's doing strange things, but it's also like, muting that part of, like, you know, like the self-conscious part of your brain, or the second guessing yourself part of the brain. It's like sometimes you know, like even falling asleep at night, like I don't have the running thought circus, the up and down derby of my brain is kind of shut off a bit. So it is nice, like, and it is nice when creating things, because it's like, I don't know, I'll try this. Like, I'm not...
You're open to trying things.
Open to trying things. I'm not super attached to anything.
Right, you're yeah. willing, you're willing, not only are you open to trying things, you're willing to
scrap everything.
Which is an important thing when working on stuff, because sometimes yeah. getting so precious about yeah. things, you lose sight of the overall picture, and... It's actually a good aspect to bring to a project, but it has been, I won't lie that I've been slightly, you know, I'm uneasy with, I don't really like your sickness, but if there's anything to, it's here, so we might as well just go with it yeah. and see where it takes us, I guess is what I'm trying
well,
to say.
Well, yeah, it has made me really be, like, mindful of trying to overwork something when I should just get rid of it. You and know I, what I mean? And it's like, you can do that where you have a project and you have some sounds or something and you like it, and it's like, you might as well just do it again and try it again, because it came from you and you can figure out something, and it'll probably be more, just like when we have done podcasts where we
have done it again,
have had to do it twice or thrice because yeah. it didn't record, or we had some recording issue with the microphones or the computer or whatever happened. And it's always better
yeah.
when we do it again. It really is always better when we do it again.
But the ability to strip things down and strip things to their basics is something very much part of this movie, as well as this era of Jess Franco.
Yeah.
It is so stripped down to the core that if there were...
It's really just three people.
Exactly. And that's what I love. Yeah, and then two other people get added, and yeah. one person gets taken. So it's like, because of that, the strength of these movies lie in this isolated cast. House of Lost Women, Cries yeah. of Pleasure has that, and this has that.
And it, but you don't even question it when it's happening.
No, you're
you know,
just
but
in.
It's also such a strange world that you think, I couldn't imagine anybody else existing in it anyway.
Exactly. You know what I mean? No,
like who else could go along with all these things that happen? And you know, truly, in watching the sweetness, I'm gonna say sweetness. Like
there is that of it though. You like know, that's
Mario's
in this
brusque.
Beginning part.
Yeah, Mario's quite a brusque man, and he seems to like be controlling Mara, his lady. But then it switches, because as they have like sweet sexual encounters, it's like Mario's kind of softening, and he was like, "Oh, Odile, she's so sweet. Like I don't really want to hurt us." And then Mara's saying, "No, they'll pay us more than ever." And he's like, "She's special." And she's like, "I know, that's why."
Who will pay us, Tara? What could you be talking about? Where is this story
going? But that
going?
Is exactly what Odile said. She's like, "It's so funny. I don't understand you at all." Her very bizarre American accent is exactly what she has. Wouldn't you say that's what it is?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
An American accent. Yeah. Send her to her death. She's so cheerful.
Wait.
She's so naive.
Tara, send her to her death. They'll pay us. Tara, where is this all leading?
That pervert couple, Mike.
What?
The pervert couple of the island. So we think we're just watching a film about a vacation, the sexual story of, oh, I think it's going to be like, you know, some... The sexual story of, oh, title reminds me of like Anais Nin or some like erotica. You know,
the story
short
of
story.
Oh,
yes,
but
I mean,
it's
but
not
yes.
really. It actually really isn't based I mean, on the story.
No,
of
No, not at
yeah.
all. Yeah, it's not. But it's not the story of O. But again, it's it makes you think of an erotica's tale that you would read, and so you think you're going to get a fun little romp where this young person who doesn't speak the language of others learns to come in new and exciting ways.
But Tara, we're entering Desaad territory.
I know, she doesn't really even get to come that much.
Well, she's certainly not going to, because we do head off to the private island to meet that pervert couple.
Well, and you know, and it's really impressive the way they arrive on the island. It's a way that I've never arrived anywhere. And Mike, I would venture to guess you are the same. And that is they pull their boat up to the island and they just hop out wearing their bottoms, all of them in their bottoms. We got Mario. He's wearing a Speedo type deal. And then two kind of thongish cheeky bottoms. And then that's all they bring with them.
Hey,
I bring myself and a little cheeky panties.
And that's that.
And that's it. And that's all I need. I'm just going to go visit my friends. And then they all come up together hand in hand in hand, as Typo would say. And there they are, ready to have some lunch.
With that pervert couple. And Tara, who is the head of this couple?
Oh, I forgot her name. Hold on, I know it. Give me the box.
I set you up so beautifully,
Tara.
Oh,
I know, but you know I'm not the sharpest, but that's okay. It's Carmen Carrion.
There we go. And actually, Terry, I was actually setting you up for either giving us her name or what you said when you first saw her on screen. Because you said, there she is, the head rug muncher herself.
That's right. Well, I mean, she's always quivering her lips and, you know, waiting about the pussies.
She's great. She's great. And
she's always game. She has really nice nails. I love it. I like the face. I like she has that like matron of the brothel type of feel. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I know
absolutely.
Many of us may associate a Dolly Parton type character, but that is a special place. The Chicken Ranch is a special place. I think everywhere else, this is going to be our gal.
And she is incredible. It is established quickly that she is German. Her and her guy are Germans. And so now O is just, she's totally out of her league. But they do speak a little English, they said.
Yeah, but they don't do it because they don't want her to understand. And then they discuss purchasing her and what the purchase price is going to be. And then they all have to dress for lunch. Because she's a princess.
Well, I love the scene when they are discussing the terms of the purchase in front of her. And at one point she says, she has no idea what we're talking about. I do love that. And I love that now things are starting to get, okay, she's in over her head. She can't understand what these people are talking about. They are talking about her. And I love the way that the princess just acknowledges that, like, oh, we're talking about her. She has no idea.
And she says it in English. Yeah. Oh, we're talking about you. And I'm just not going to let you know. But the other thing, oh man, it just flew out of my head like a fever dream that I was going to say the other thing. Oh, I remember. For a moment, though, I was thinking she's like a spy and she actually understands Spanish and she's going to come out and be like, I knew what you were saying all along and now I'm the dominatrix and you fuck my sister to death and now I'm going to sword you. Like, I really thought that was going to be the case.
Tara, not going to be the case, but before we find out what the case is, we do have this great lunch scene.
Yeah, I mean, you know, rarely drinks. And when they pour her a bit of wine, I thought it was Rueda. I was trying to read the bottle. It felt like I could. Anyway, it's probably some form of Tempranillo in some form. What other? But it must have been drugged, Mike. What do you think?
Yeah, but before,
she said it was too strong.
But before that, one of the great lines, the great conversation in the whole movie is when the princess, they're just talking and she's like, well, we believe in white supremacy.
Oh my God. That's right. I forgot about it. What did she say?
She's like,
she was like, oh, I thought they were going to be cannibals too.
Like, we believe in white supremacy.
Just like, oh.
And then Mario says something like,
he
racist.
He was like, oh, I hate the Moors. And she was like, don't be racist,
yeah,
Mario.
Yeah, that's my favorite part. She's like, anyway,
don't you know they built the...
Right after, yeah. She's like, we believe in white supremacy. Like,
Stop being racist.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a whole... Like, you know, he really tees up that these are bad people, Mike. I mean, I think that that's what he's doing.
What do you mean she doesn't want him to be racist?
So, but then I'm like, oh, they're going to be cannibals. Because she was like, well, we ate some of those.
Wow.
And the way she said it, I thought that they were eating the women.
Well, and it's funny because cannibalism on your mind, because something else we've watched this week was Undertaker and his pals. And we were discussing and Blood Feast. Mm-hmm. So we were discussing, especially with Undertaker and
an
his pals.
An Egyptian feast?
Yeah, but especially with Undertaker and his pals, Tara pointed out, you know, is the cost of meat so much that it's worth killing people to feed them, to feed your customers?
That is what I've always said. Like in Motel Hell, when they're making jerky out of people and selling the jerky, is like, is it really, really that much cheaper to kill people? Like, couldn't they just break into other people's farmlands and kill a cow and drag it off? Isn't that easier than killing a human and dealing with everything else?
And with Undertaker and his pals, you have like about 5 people involved in this ring. That's a lot. That's like a lot of loose lips. You know what I mean? That's a lot to know.
The Undertaker and his pals. I mean, yeah, there's a whole lot of loose lips. And like, couldn't they instead like kill like, you know, rats or like something easier to like deal with?
I mean, I'm glad that they did kill humans because we got Undertaker and his pals.
Yeah,
but,
it's
you know,
a fantastic.
But
film.
That is, I believe, why cannibalism was probably in your mind, as well as Blood Feast.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my mind is not a steel trap right now, so it's probably like
it's swimming in there. Yeah. Like I've been thinking
it's
about
swimming
cannibalism.
In there. Yeah, like as I wrote in the notes, oh wow, are they white supremacists and cannibals?
That's amazing.
I
love that you thought that.
Yeah, I do like that they said, you know, they were like, I like when they also said, you must have gone to the top of the mountain to find a girl that illiterate, when they were talking about how illiterate, like somebody that they brought them was. Yeah. It's great. Anyway.
I love that you went there. Also, I love that you went there, and I'm right there with you, because it was probably a night after going out, but this is not the first time we watched this movie, but I also had a very hazy memory of it,
so
too, so it was
hazy.
Definitely
we must have watched this, like
coming home from a night out.
Yeah, or in a fever or something. No, but I did remember parts of it. It's just that I couldn't remember what they did with the gals.
Well,
with the one gal, only one gal that we get
gonna
to experience.
Find
really.
Out too. But Mario's having his doubts. He's second guessing. He's got that second guessing gene going through his brain right now.
Well, he should. She is so sweet, and he really. They shouldn't just, you know, nice people that you like are so hard to come by. You shouldn't just murder them. You know,
hold
what I mean?
On to your friends, as Maz said.
You shouldn't just, you know, tie them up to a Euro king size bed, which is just 2 twin beds kind of pushed together. And then,
by the way, as of the last time we were in Europe, still the way they do king beds in Europe.
It's just like, can you get a queen anywhere? Like, can you get a queen? You just have to have 2 undersized twins and push them together. And sometimes they have that little hinge on the inside, but that shit doesn't work. Like, the mattress always shifts. It's like, I know there's a crack there, and I'm going to be in that crack.
I'm
actually, you're going to be in the crack probably, Mike, because you're on my side of the bed
when
most
I've
of the time.
Stayed in those rooms on tour without you before touring with you with bandmates.
Yes.
That is when you walk into the room, that is how like a 2 beds will be. They'll be next to you. The first thing I would do would move them.
Scoot them apart. Like, we are not going to hold hands while we're sleeping, gentlemen. Like, here you are, lads. Like, yeah, I don't know. No one can put their arm. Anyway, yeah, I don't understand that. But they do have that. She's a princess. They're on their own private island. But they still manage to get a big mattress.
Nope.
Do you think they have, like, on European podcasts, do you think they have, like, mattress websites? Do you think people can, like, get Sattva or something?
Oh, right.
Like,
yeah,
do you think
that's
broken yet and people can, like, get a big one?
You know, we have to,
do our research. We're just going to have to ask anybody. Maybe that was a rude question I had. Maybe everybody likes them better. They're like, Tara, you stupid bitch. Like, it's actually so much more convenient to put the sheets on. Do you have somebody over? You can push them apart and put 2 people in the bed. I don't know why you have to be so into your crackless bed. We love our bed with a crack. I use the crack. I put my arm in the middle. We do all kinds of weird sex shit in the crack. Like, maybe it's great. I don't know. So I apologize for being so judgmental about everyone's crack. Now, we do have a fair amount of big toe sucking. When O first hits the scene, they eat lunch and then they drug her. And then they're like, let's just bang her one time while she's still passed out. So the sad curly haired German dude decides to go give it a go, you know, and just try to pump one out while she's out. And I love that Mara decides to lick his spine as though it were some erotic nether region.
I'm a big fan of unnecessary licking and things like that. I love
performative, unnecessary performative licking and things of that nature. I too am into it. Yeah. I'm into it. Like it.
Yeah, like a chick licking her own tits. I love that. I love that.
Well, anybody licking their own tits. It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, it's a lot easier.
It's a lot easier. It is unnecessary.
I like a good unnecessary sexual
just
gesture.
Just a display of sexuality.
Unnecessary sexual gesture.
I think that's the right way to put it. Well, this has many of them, sir. Many unnecessary sexual gestures. She's licking the area between the muscles in his back as though it were a sexual crevice that gives her erotic thrills. I really enjoyed that. I like that the princess is just really going at them nips, you know, with her fingernails. Her lips are quivering. We get that whole scene. And then the toe sucking was unusual because we have a lady who's out and she only sucked the big toe. And she sucked the big toe as though it were a phallus.
For a while.
For a really long while. And in my kind of fevered brain, it felt like a good 5 minutes. It felt like an eternity. Like, and I was just thinking, like, wow.
But Tara, maybe this goes to your whole thing about the Jess movies and the softcore movies of this era being, it's a replacement for cocksucking.
Yeah, and truly, like, that definitely is, because just as the way that Franco, I have to think, because I'm sure it's true, he has the ladies kiss each other as they were performing.
Yeah,
cunnilingus on each other.
I think it's even
like
been
that
in a
can
thing,
be
yeah.
the only way that they do it, because that's what we're witnessing, and this is no exception, because we do get that, like, you know, vulvic vibe on every French kiss between the gals, and it really is. I was going to say unnatural, because you just don't kiss someone that way.
Yeah,
but I think a better thing actually would be just like it's unusual.
In this one, it feels more natural than some others.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know. Maybe it's just the
given
brain
the context,
and
yeah.
also just like where we are at right now. Like, I don't know.
But it's fantastic. Look, I mean, you know,
I'm
not complaining.
I was just going right along with everything.
Yeah, I'm not
that
complaining.
We've...
It's just if this is the first Jess Franco film that you've ever seen, you might be taken aback.
It'd be an odd one to be first.
It would be a
say this
really
to make
unusual.
This your first. I mean, I very much like this movie a lot, and I recommend it. It's just I would warm up with some others.
I think it would be confounding because it's so much less. It doesn't have the funny sweet parts. Like, I guess it has sweet parts, but usually there's some like humor and dancing and like a little frivolity in Jess Franco. This does not have that at all. This is pretty much like, you know, like a sex romp and then darkness, and everything's dangerous for everyone. I did write down a really nice lesson, Mike, that I'm reading in my notes. It's that if a couple that you don't understand tries to seduce you in a resort town, don't go anywhere with them. You just fuck them at home.
This is a great lesson. This is the advice we're doling out.
Yes. I think that's pretty good. If you don't understand them or get like one of those translate apps and put it on your phone, and
yeah,
then you can
yeah.
just run that as you go. Yeah, but yes. So when the big German man is with the baby face is having sex with O while she's unconscious, and he's like, "No puedo, ayúdame," and then he starts crying like, like that's the creepy part. That's
yeah.
when you're like, "This is not going to go well."
It sure isn't, because
you're like,
he can only.
This is going to be really bad, and then.
He can only get off from the sadism, and we look quickly in that because the princesses, they take him, and, you know, help him out, help finish him off. But she's like, you want to think about her being in pain? You want to think about me slashing her pussy with my whip? And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, where are we headed?
Yeah. Stabbing we are her, beating her. She's covered in streaks of blood. Yeah.
We are headed to one of the darkest, most intense Jess Franco scenes. The last scene, the climax of this movie.
So for a moment, gets away. She's out on the ocean. She sees Mario, and then they bang in a field near some cacti and brambles. Very pointy things. It's very lovely. Again, kind of idyllic. But then Mara catches her and drags her inside and injects her so rudely with drugs. Mind-altering drugs, everyone. Mind-altering drugs. Isn't that so rude? She was so sweet.
So rude.
Why do they have to ruin the sweetness and fun?
So that we can get to this great scene, Tara. Like I say with many movies, you got to have these decisions made so that we have scenes like this. And man, it is wild.
So first we have the kind of prismatic vision drugged view from looking around. And when the crew walks in, it is the princess and Mara in some bondage gear, like a devil's hood on the princess. And Mara's wearing like a leather thing over her mouth, which makes her breathe like a gimp mask.
It sounds incredible.
Sounds great.
The princess is holding a mace.
Yeah, like a morning star.
It's great.
And then they have chains. They chain her down. And then they just start beating. You think they're not going to use the mace, morning star,
right,
whatever
away.
It is. You think they're not going to use that until last, because that could kill somebody.
Boom.
Just boom. Go right,
right away. Going at pure violence immediately through this prism haze.
And then our kinky German comes in and he starts banging her. He starts banging the princess while she's beating. And then she pulls out a long, curved knife and just slits her throat. Didn't see that coming.
Kills her. And as they're banging, as they're beating her, she's bloody. It's a snuff orgy. And yeah,
a drugged snuff orgy in crazy color with drugs.
But yeah, but I can't emphasize how wild everything looks through the prism, and especially Mara with the mask on her face and the princess with the hood through the prism. It just looks so strange.
But it really conveys the, drugged confusion, and it's scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's all of that. And it really is a very mean and dark ending to this movie.
Yeah.
So what it all leads to. And I think it makes this idyllic intro that much more,
yes. You get the extremes. And then Mario, again, it's fine. Jess Franco, we can spoil it. You can't just watch a Jess Franco thing once. You need to watch it a couple times to really appreciate it. So Mario goes to the boat. I don't know if he goes to the boat, but somewhere he gets a gun.
Not explained. He just has it.
He figures it out. He's a smart guy. And then he goes and he snuffs out the snuff orgy. The snuff orgy gets snuffed by the shotgun blast. He carries his love out into the ocean. And as he walks her into the ocean and they walk and wade out farther and farther, the film ends. Fin.
The end of the movie. And yeah, look, incredible. I absolutely love this one. And it's, like we said, I wouldn't say this should be your first Jess Franco. I don't know exactly what should be. I mean, for many, it's Vampiros, Lesbos, and She Killed in Ecstasy, which is earlier, and it was...
God, they're so good.
They're amazing.
I still don't have a chenille cape.
Yeah.
That's a crime.
But the Golden Films era stuff really speaks to us for so many different reasons. And like you said, Tara, there's so many different ways they can go. There are frivolous moments in movies like Night of Open Sex, but then there, yeah, which are mixed though with like putting a burning iron up someone's pussy, and so it's all mixed together. But then there's,
yeah,
the really somber, melancholy movies like Bahia Blanca, like something like this, and then there's the isolated darkness of something like Cries of Pleasure. House of Lost Women has the frivolity comes from the strangeness of it, the masturbating Lena, braggadocious Antonio Mayans. Antonio Mayans always brings some sort of that special something when he's in one of the Jess Franco movies. So they go.
Yeah.
The tone of them can shift scene to scene.
Yeah, but Vampiros Lesbos, I would say, is more of like a stylized straight film that somebody would imagine. They would think it's far out there, but it's kind of like it's more like in line culturally with what things were doing, what films looked like, what films did. You know what I mean? Like the tale, I think, is more, I don't want to use the word normal, but like what one would anticipate.
Yeah, and it but being like it the just, 70, it being like 1970. But then also the German lens movies like Barbed Wire Girls, like
it's more in line with like an exploitation film that you would expect. Yeah. Whereas these golden era films, you have no clue what you're getting into. And it's not even about, like, you have these stunning settings and he's using the landscape, mostly of different areas of Spain and the Azores. And it's not necessarily the stylization of like a cool part of culture. It's more like these isolated, strange interactions between people. They're just so unusual, and you never know what's going to happen minute to minute.
Yeah.
And you couldn't guess.
Yeah. But I was saying, I think also the later 70s ones, like Barbed Wire Kisses, like Blue Rita, are strange they're Blue very Rita. Dark and grimy.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
And those have a very otherworldly, but in more of a grimy way.
Yeah. It's like the 70s gone wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So there's so many different eras of Jess Franco. Love them all. But for us, it's this is where we really shine with Franco. And I love that Severin, you know, seemingly is going to do as many of this era as they can. And there's still so many more to come out.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Prolific gentleman.
You know, we will be first in line to grab these. Where was she? Where was she? Well, Tara, this is it's a little bit shorter than we like to go, but honestly, with you're feeling under the weather, I'm okay saying, and I feel the listeners will understand.
Apologies.
That maybe we're going to, this one will be a little short. Not that bad. We're in the 50-minute era, but.
I mean, look, I could ramble on about anything, but I don't.
I think it's good, Tara. I think you need your rest.
I don't think it would be interesting. You need to read more lists.
I think it's time to take your rest.
Do you want me to talk about the fire structure constant 00729?
Look, I think we can get to that
at a
later date. Now, I had an idea for what we wanted to do next week, but then before we went on, you said to don't commit, because that's where you're at right now, in a non-committal way. So I won't.
Well, I fear for you committing and then me being like,
what? You being like, what?
Just being like, yeah, whatever.
Wow.
What if I'm not into it?
We discussed this. I'm not springing this on you.
Well, you could. I said you could do it in a non-committal way. You can say
I'm not going to.
No, just give kind of like maybe this is what we're thinking.
I'm not going to because
you don't want to be wishy-washy.
You've already set up that you're gonna be.
I don't know.
You're
that
gonna
for
be
certain.
Like kind of like you're gonna be kind of contradictory about it if I say it.
But what if I get and feel great and then I'm like, I want to watch this thing, and I get all excited tomorrow and I'm miraculously normal?
I'll just save it then, Tara. I'll just save it. I'm not going to say. I'm not going to
post something about it.
We'll
if it works out.
We'll see what happens. Tara, I'm letting you go. We
got
to let you go.
For you. I hope it works out for you, Mike. And everybody else, thank you for being here.
It's a movie
Apologies
that you love,
you.
By the way.
I already forgot what it is. I'm going to tell you right now. I have no clue. I was trying to coax you into saying it because I have zero clue what you said.
I picked it because of you, like for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry. I just yelled that. I just want to make sure I can talk about it coherently because I enjoyed it. The one that we just watched. Well, yeah. I don't know what it's called.
Yes. I'm not. You know what? Listeners, you're with us. You know how things go here. You know how underground espionage operates. We got to let Tara go. The breakdown is happening. The crash down is happening. Go watch Sexual Story of O. Get it. Watch some Jess Franco for this Valentine's Day. Day of pleasure. We will talk to you next week.